All right, we are on Kapitel Kuf Lamed, chapter 130. And while I know that I've promised on a number of occasions not to say this is a famous chapter anymore, I feel like I need to one more time say it. Anyway, this is certainly a famous chapter. We're always told that when you don't know what chapter to say for a particular occasion, Kuf Lamed is always a good one. But tonight we're going to try and see what it is about Kuf Lamed that makes it a good default kapitel, default chapter of Tehillim to say. This is the 11th of the 15 chapters starting with Shir Hamalos, or a Song of Ascents. And these 15 chapters, these 15 Shir Hamalos chapters, were sung on the 15 steps in the base of Mikdash, and on each step, the next step up, they would sing the next chapter that starts with Shir Hamalos, and the Levim would sing, and the Kohanim would play, and each chapter they would sing and play a little louder, and in a little bit higher key, as they progressed through all 15 chapters of the Shir Hamalos. David HaMelech wrote the Shir Hamalos chapters after he completed the large Kuf Yud Tes, in order to show 15 different examples of implementing all the ideas for spiritual growth and development that he had talked about in Kuf Yud Tes. This particular Kuf Lamed, which I referred to a few moments ago as sort of the default kapitel, if one doesn't know what chapter to say, one often is, well, say Kuf Lamed. This is a good default kapitel to say. It's sort of, I like to think of it as a kapitel klali. In yeshiva, each different grade has a rebbe that teaches a shir to that grade. However, when an important speaker comes, or when there's an important event, or an important shir or lecture to be given in the yeshiva, and all the boys from all the different grades and levels assemble together, they call it a shir klali, a shir for everyone. And the person delivering such a shir or such a lecture has to somehow deliver a shir understandable by the youngest boys and the oldest boys. So I'm going to refer to Kuf Lamed as sort of a tefillah klali, because it's designed to include all people in all different occasions in one default tefillah that a person can use for just about any occasion. A tefillah klali. And as we go through it, we'll see exactly how it fits to just about every person at just about every possible occasion. Let's start with Pasuk Aleph, verse 1, says as follows. Shir Hamalos v'Mamakim Kirasicha Hashem. A song of ascents. From the depths I have called to you, Hashem. So the depths is plural. Mimamakim, from the many depths I have called to you, indicating that when a person is davening from the depths of sorrow to Hashem, it's not just one depth. It's many depths. A person who is davening in a desperate situation to Hashem feels like they have many, many different things that are pushing them into sort of a feeling of despair or desperation. And because of that, David HaMelech calls them Mamakim, from the depths, from all my depths of all my different despair, I called to you, Hashem. Now there's a medrash that says as follows. The Jewish people asked Hashem, when will you redeem us, Hashem, and send Mashiach? And Hashem answered, when you call to me from the depths. And therefore, David HaMelech is also referring sort of obliquely to that medrash when he says, Mimamakim Kirasika. From the very depths we are calling, and as you indicated, Hashem, when we call from the very depths, you will save us. The Talmud derives reinforcement here for the halacha that a person is not allowed to daven from a high place, that a person should daven from a low place. A person is not allowed to stand on top of a bench and daven. A person is not supposed to stand on top of a bed or on top of anything that puts them in a high, in sort of a high standing place when they daven, that rather a person should consider themselves davening from the depths, not in a haughty manner, but from the depths that they're calling out to Hashem, And therefore, says the Talmud, a person should not daven from a high place. A person should daven from the depths. In fact, in many Sephardi shuls, either the entrance to the shul or sometimes the bima area itself is put several steps down. So a person has to go down in order to go into the place where you daven. In order to fulfill this pasuk, mi ma'akim karasika, from the depths of I call out to you. So this is a general statement, part of our tefillah klal. We daven to Hashem from the depths of our despair. It can apply to any person in any difficult situation they might have. A person is davening because they're overwhelmed with their own troubles. They're overwhelmed, and therefore from the mamakim, from their depths, karasicha Hashem, they call out to Hashem. In Pasuk Beis, verse 2, it goes on to say, Hashem shima v'chayli, Hashem, hear my voice, tiyena aznecha, and that your ears should be attentive, kashuvos l'kol tachunai, to the voice of my supplications, of my entreaties. So hear my voice. In other words, I'm shouting from these depths. I want you to hear my voice, Hashem. I'm shouting to you from these depths. But there's a halacha in davening. A person is not allowed to shout or raise their voice when they're davening. The Talmud says a person who davens in a loud voice is doing the same thing that the old prophets of idols and Avodah Zarah used to do. They used to figure that their idols don't hear so well far away, so they'll have to talk louder. So we, on the other hand, when we daven softly, because Hashem can hear us wherever we are. So a person who davened in a loud voice because Hashem should hear him better is acting in a silly manner like they used to do with the old Avodah Zarah. Yet here David HaMelech says, you know what? From the depths, I'm going to call out in a loud voice and you'll hear me. So call out means in a loud voice, though. Right? So he says, Shema b'koili, hear my voice. My voice b'koili is that I'm calling out. So why do I have to call out? Hashem can hear me if I whisper. Shouldn't be any need to call out. So the Talmud says like this, that when a person is davening, they talk softly, they know Hashem can hear them wherever they are. They don't have to shout out. That's when a person is davening and in a calm state, and they have presence of mind of what they're saying. But when a person is so overcome with their troubles and despair, they can't have the presence of mind to daven softly, and they end up calling out loudly to Hashem. And that's what David HaMelech is saying, that I can't even think of what to say, Hashem. Shema b'koli, just hear my voice. I'm not saying anything. I don't know what I'm saying. Right? Hear my voice. I can't organize a proper davening to you, Hashem, and figure out exactly how to do it in a proper way with the right words and the right level of my voice. So just hear Koli. Just hear my voice. I'm calling to you. I don't know what to say, but hear my voice calling to you, Hashem, from the depths. Hearken to my voice, to Koli. Right? Correct. If it was davening, he'd say, Shema bedivarai. Hear my words. Hear what I'm saying. Right? If you're talking to someone, you say, listen to what I'm saying. You don't say, listen to my voice. Well, you might, but that would sound very strange. You say, listen to what I'm saying. You want the person to understand your words. Here, David HaMelech is saying, forget words, just hear my voice. I don't know what to say. I can't have the presence of mind to follow all the organized halachos of how a person is supposed to daven. So just listen and hear my voice. Shema b'koli Hashem. He goes on to say, and that applies to anybody in all particular situations. A person is feeling despair, they're going to call out. They don't have the presence of mind to figure out an exact, okay, let me look up here, I look in the Siddur, this is the appropriate, I'll say this paragraph, and very calm, then I'm going to go over here. They're full of despair, they're in the depths of despair. When a person calls out to Hashem, he just says, listen, hear my voice. I don't know what I'm saying, Hashem, but I need help. If you'll remember every single avera, Hashem, who'll be able to stand up in front of that? Now it says, "Ima vaynas tishmar." If you'll remember all the averos, ka, and it uses the two-letter name of Hashem, which we don't see all that much in Tehillim. The Talmud tells us that the two-letter name of Hashem is the first half of the four-letter name of Hashem. Now, how does that help us understand it anymore? Because in Golus, outside of Eretz Yisrael, in our exile, we refer to Hashem as Kol. That Hashem is with us in Golus, but the Shekhinah is not completely with us. So instead of referring to the four-letter name, we abbreviate it to Kol. So we're saying, Hashem, if out here in Golus, where we're trying our very best, you're going to remember every single Avera we do, we'll have no chance. But it doesn't quite flow that way, the Pasuk, because then David HaMelech says, Im Avonai Tishmar Yakov, if you'll guard and remember every Avera, Hashem Miyamot. See, like we're repeating Hashem's name. If you, Hashem, will remember every Avera, then Hashem, who will be able to stand in front of that? Who will be able to stand before that? What David HaMelech is alluding to by the doubling of Hashem's name there is like this. If you, Hashem, will remember in every single Avera that possibly I ever do here in Golus, then how will you, Hashem, the ultimate merciful Hashem, be able to be merciful to us and return us to Eretz Yisrael, because you will be still remembering all the things we did in Golus. Hashem is a merciful God. And when we refer to that, we refer to the four-letter name of Hashem, meaning that he's being merciful. The two-letter name we refer to in Golus. So if Hashem, with two letters, you'll remember everything we did in Golus, then how will you, Hashem, the merciful four-letter Hashem, be able to be so merciful? Because you'll have to be remembering all the bad things that we did. Is that what you mean?
It's not using the book, it's using the other.
Right, but that represents... Right. In Pasuk Dalin, it says, for forgiveness is yours, Hashem, in order that you will be feared. For with you is forgiveness, Hashem, as opposed to what? Of course Hashem is the one that forgives people. The David HaMelech is saying it's Hashem that directly, on a case-by-case basis, personally forgives people. A malach doesn't forgive a person. Hashem does not create some midah system in the world that forgives people. He personally, kaviyach, whatever that means, forgives people. But there are certain things that Hashem does, that's the way the world works. We've talked before that midah keneged midah means that everything a person does comes back to them. I recently had a personal story that illustrated this all too well. We're going to leave out a few of the more embarrassing details. But a few weeks ago, outside of shul, a fellow came over to me, started speaking to me in, I would definitely say, not very polite manner. And he continued on yelling at me about some particular matter until it was embarrassing. People were coming in and out, and I'm standing and this guy's screaming at me. Right? It wasn't the worst thing ever happened in the world, but it was a little embarrassing. So I was wondering why that happened, and it took me 2 weeks to remember why. About 30 years ago, I was in, I was about 2 years old. 30 years ago, I was davening in a particular place, there was a lot of people there, because there was a guest speaker there, and during, I think it was Kriyas Torah, and there was a guy behind me talking. Pet peeve of mine. So I turn behind, and I give the guy a big shush. So about 20 minutes later, they get up to announce the guest speaker. What a great guy he is in all of his accomplishments. And I think you see where the story is going. The guy behind me that I shushed is the guest speaker, and he gets up and he walks up. This guy outside of shul is that guy's son. His son, who was not even born at that time. Right? Now, I was completely right to shush this guy. This guy was probably completely right about what he was yelling at me about. Whatever he said I did wrong, I probably did. All irrelevant. Once I shushed that guy behind me, I set in motion events that were not stoppable. I mean, Hashem could have intervened, but Hashem did not decide, so to speak, a couple weeks ago, oh, you know what? I just remembered, I got to give that to you a patch for 30 years ago.
It's the way the world works. It's like gravity. Hashem keeps the world running with a certain set of rules. You drop something, it falls to the ground. The sun comes up in the morning. You shush the guy behind you, you're going to get it back. Right? Right or wrong?
Give me a break.
It's a mita keneged mita. All right? When I shush
the kid that was born, there's some screws missing somewhere.
How so? I shushed this guy.
Yeah, and you were right.
I was right. But maybe he was embarrassed by that.
So he told his son about
it? No, his son had no idea.
That's what I'm saying.
His son never heard of this.
No,
that's the mita keneged mita. The son had nothing about this. Wasn't even born.
Nobody did find out about it.
Some never heard of it. Some wasn't even born yet.
So him yelling at you was not related?
Nothing
saying?
To do with it. It just so happened that that's the way the world works. That because I found something to admonish this guy about, 30 years later, his son found something to admonish me about.
What did he admonish you about?
I'm not going to go into that. All right? Let's just say that just as this guy was wrong for talking, I was probably wrong in what he was admonishing me about it.
No.
You're giving me too much credit. All right? But he had no idea that he didn't even know I ever knew his father.
Oh, I didn't get
that.
Right?
He had no idea I knew his father. Right? But it just so happened. And who's this guy that happens to be chewing me out? Happens to be, by coincidence, the son of the guy that I coincidentally shushed in shul. What goes around comes around. There is no such thing as doing something that's not going to come back. Now, to this day, 30 years later, I believe I was right to shush that guy. He was doing something wrong, right? Nonetheless, as the guest, which I didn't know he was the guest speaker, I might have thought twice, or not, I might have, but he was the guest speaker, and perhaps he felt a little irritated that, here, I've come all this way to be the guest speaker, and some young kid is shushing me. Right?
I would feel that way.
So I doubt if he would remember that. I doubt if a year later he remembered it. It was a completely non-incident. Right? At least, I believe so. I don't believe he'd even remember that. If you found him now, I think he's alive, if you found him, and you asked him, do you remember a guy shushing you in shul 30 years ago? He wouldn't know what you were talking about. Right. Yet, what goes around comes around. His son, right? And this guest speaker doesn't even live in this city. His son grew up, got married, moved to Chicago, right? And coincidentally chewed me out about something outside of shul one day where I was also wrong. Just like he was wrong for talking. Now, he shouldn't have chewed me out about it because it caused me an uncomfortable public embarrassment. I should have been more sensitive to the fact that this guy might be embarrassed to be chewed out.
When did you realize the media?
About yesterday. Yeah, this happened a couple weeks ago, and only yesterday did I finally put together because I didn't even remember shushing the guy. It was so long ago. It didn't stand out in my mind. And so a lot of things that come back in the world to you, you don't even know why they're coming back. If I hadn't remembered shushing that guy, I'd have no idea what I did to deserve this guy chewing me out outside of shul.
So the positive things work like that?
Positive things work the same way. Had I known to shush this guy but decided, you know what? I don't want to take a chance of embarrassing him. It could be that that guy would have said, I want to chew him out, but you know what? It might embarrass him. But here's the problem with the positive things, you never know. Because if he had decided not to chew me out, I would have known that. But it works the same way. What goes around comes around. So that's the way the world works. David HaMelech says, "Ki imcha haslicha," with you is forgiveness. It's not just part of the way the world works. It's Hashem intervening in the way the world works to specially grant forgiveness to people. The way the world works is if you do something wrong...
I sure need a lot.
If you do something wrong, what should happen? It should come back and slap you. What goes around comes around. But Hashem will step in and decide to forgive you. Because only Hashem can stop and forgive you. Says David HaMelech, in three words, an entire philosophy. Ki imcha haslicha. With you, Hashem, is forgiveness. Leman tivare, in order that you should be feared. So what does it mean, in order that you should be feared? It means that the more averos a person has, the harder it is to feel a connection to Hashem and to worry about what's going to happen when you do another avera. You're so busy worrying about what you already did that it's hard to worry about what's going to come up. By Hashem forgiving you, it enables a person to sort of return to the point where they can worry about, oh, you know what? I fear Hashem. I don't want to do anything wrong again. I can only speak for myself, but this is a pasuk klali also. This is something that applies to all different circumstances, all different people. Everybody does something that they need forgiveness for. Big, little, medium, whatever. And when they're in the depths of despair, only you, Hashem, can forgive me and take care of the situation here. Pasuk 5, Pasuk 8, verse 5, David HaMelech says, Ki vise Hashem kivso nafshi ulavid ulvaro ochalti. I hope Hashem, my neshama hope, and I wait for His word. So I'm hoping Hashem, I'm hoping nafshi, my neshama, ulavaro, and for His word, I'm longing. So it's a sort of a flowery verse, but what it means is that I'm hoping, Hashem, for your help. Kivso nafshi, my neshama is waiting for your help, and I'm davening for your help, and for your word, I'm waiting. So, kivisi Hashem, I'm hoping Hashem you'll help me. Kivso nafshi, and my neshama is hoping. Meaning, I'm hoping that you will help me both physically and spiritually. I, my physical self, am wanting your help, and nafshi, my neshama, is also wanting your help. People don't just daven because they need help spiritually. They daven because they feel like they need help with their physical problems as well. And vice versa. You know, the old saying, there's no such thing as an atheist in a foxhole. When a person is in a physically bad situation, they feel they're davening, so they're davening, and also there's a little spiritual component also. So it says, both I and my neshama, all of us in here, are wanting your help, Hashem. And your word, I'm waiting for. Word means Hashem has promised that He'll help people. I'm waiting for it. Your word that you said you'll help, that's what I'm waiting for. And then a very, this word famous, the next pasuk, also famous, Nafshila Hashem Mishamarim La Baiker Shamarim La Baiker. My neshama is to Hashem from those who wait for the morning, who wait for the morning. So Shomrim La Baiker, guarding or waiting or longing for dawn. What does it mean to long for dawn? Think of a mushel of a night watchman whose job is to guard something all night long. The way he knows when his job is over for the night is what? When the sun comes up. All night long, what's he waiting for? He's looking up to see what? Maybe the little rays of dawn are starting to come over, and it's almost time for him to go home. He's longing for dawn. To long for dawn means to really want for a ray of sunshine, or a ray of help, or a ray of success, or a ray of Mashiach, or a ray of Geula, or a ray of something to break through. Hashem, I'm shomrim labakim. I'm longing to see that rays of the morning burst through. And then he repeats it, Shomrim LaBaiker. Why twice does he say it? What happens every time the night watchman looks up? He sees what? Nothing. So what does he do? He never looks up again, right? No, he looks again. He keeps looking. He keeps looking. He doesn't give up. She's Shomrim LaBaiker. There's no Baiker. So he's Shomrim LaBaiker again. Says David HaMelech, I'm Shomrim LaBaiker, but you know what? When I don't see it, Hashem, I don't give up. I'm Shomrim LaBaiker again. I keep waiting to see it. In Zion, Yachel Yisrael, Hashem, Kibim, Hashem, Achesed, Varbeim, Ophidus. Hashem, hope to Hashem. Kindness is with Hashem, and redemption is with Him. So kindness is with Hashem, and redemption is with Him. Don't get discouraged. Because now we're davening for all this. What's And the show me the boker, we're still waiting. A person tends to start thinking, it's me. Hashem's not going to help me. I'm not worthy. All these things that I'm asking Hashem for, right, for help with this or for help with that, for a refuah or whatever it is, you start thinking, you know what? And all of a sudden a person starts thinking all the things they've done. You know what? Maybe Hashem's not going to give me that boker. Maybe I don't really deserve it. Says David HaMelech, don't think that way, because Hashem is chesed. Hashem are chesed, and Harbeim Ofenus, he has plenty of chesed for you. Don't give up just because whoever you are, keep being Shomrim Laboiker, Vehu Yivdes Yisrael Mikol Avonasav, and he will redeem Israel from all of their sins. So if Hashem wants to bring Geula and bring Mashiach, we have to be worthy. We have to be the kind of people that deserve Hashem's chesed. So first he'll wipe out all of our Averos. That's what it means. He will redeem Israel, but first he'll wipe out all of our Averos and let us start all over again. There's not one specific thing in this capitulum. Everything is in general terms. Longing for the dawn. For the dawn of what? For whatever it is you happen to be longing for. The night watchman is wanting the sun to come up. A person who's ill wants a refuah. A person who needs parnasa wants money. Whatever it is that you want, you're longing for that
morning.
That morning, whatever your morning is. There's not a specific thing in this capitulum. It's all general statements. Because the main idea is that by focusing on bitachon, on trusting in Hashem as the linchpin for davening, this capitul becomes useful for any occasion. If davening to Hashem means simply calling to Hashem and saying, Hashem, I trust you to do what needs to be done, please help me. This capitul is about trusting Hashem. Bitachon, or trusting Hashem, is not the same as emunah, or belief in Hashem. Emunah, believing in Hashem, means I believe 100% that Hashem took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, and everything that he told Moshe Rabbeinu to write in the Torah is true, and I believe in everything that Hashem said. That's called emunah, belief. I believe. Trusting in Hashem means you trust that he'll do the good thing the next time too. It ain't happened yet.
What's faith?
Faith is emunah. Faith is believing that whatever Hashem says happened in the past, happened. Whatever Hashem says in the Torah is true. You have to do whatever it says. But things that haven't happened yet, so I'll try and make it even, boil it down even more. We believe that Hashem took the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, and we believe that at some time he will bring us back to Eretz Yisrael, and he will bring the Mashiach. Believing that Hashem took us out of Egypt is emunah, is faith.
And believing,
that he will bring us back there to Israel is bitachon, is trust. You can't believe in something that hasn't happened yet. We use the words and we sling them around almost interchangeably. We say, I have belief, I have emunah that Mashiach will come. No, you don't. You have bitachon, you have trust that Mashiach will come. You have belief that Hashem promised to do so. Good. We say that, Ani Ma'amin, right? I have emunah in Mashiach. Means I have emunah in belief that Hashem will do what he said. Right? And it's a fine line there between, it would.
Stump the teacher.
It would, but you know what? But let's also remember that the Rambam did not write the words Ani Ma'amin. He didn't make a song out of it. He wrote that Hashem will bring Mashiach is one of the main principles of Judaism. Right? So we say, I mean, I believe that Hashem promised to do that, and I believe that Hashem fulfills his promises. That's emunah. And I trust that this particular promise will occur, and Hashem will bring the Mashiach as betachon. A lot of it comes together like that. I was trying to make a more simpler distinction. Right? But that's exactly, I believe that Hashem promised to bring Mashiach. I believe that Hashem will fulfill his promise. And I have bitachon that sometime in the future Mashiach will come. Why we want so desperately for Mashiach to come is another topic. There's only one thing that we ever say in davening that we want to do every day. Kivino kol hayom for Mashiach to come. It's the most important thing we mention in davening. And we have absolutely no idea why we want that so badly. That's another topic. So when we say this capitul, we're telling Hashem, we not only believe in everything that you've said and done, Hashem, we trust you to take care of us. And here's all the examples of what I'm saying. I'm showing the book. I'm trusting you. I'm putting myself in your hands. That's applicable to any situation. There are some kapitulach we've seen that emphasize parnasa, or that emphasize health, or that emphasize family, or that emphasize certain things. This is emphasizing Hashem, take care of me. You know, sometimes a child comes to their parent, I want a drink. I want something to eat. And sometimes a child just comes crying to their parent, mommy, take care of me. What's wrong exactly? The kid's crying. Crying so much, can't even get out of them, what's wrong? They just need mommy to take. This is the pitul. Tap in him will take care of these. If you have that betachin, that means that you trust that Hashem will take care of everything. And that everything in the world is designed for nothing but Hashem's plan to take care of the world, and you want Hashem to take care of you as part of His plan. Now, betachin means not just thinking that Hashem will take care of you, but that Hashem is taking care of the whole world. Not just you. That everything in the world is part of Hashem's plan. You can't have betachin and just trust, well, Hashem's taking care of me. But the rest of the world, I don't know what's going on. He's taking care of you as part of His plan for the whole world. So now, like you mentioned before, now the betachin gets a little trickier. It's one thing to say, well, okay, Hashem, I trust you'll take care of me and give me a refuah from my illness. It's another thing to say, and if you don't, I believe that's part of your master plan and it is for the best. Now we're getting on. Hashem, this is about betachin. Betachin does not just mean I believe Hashem will give me whatever I ask for. I mean, it starts off that way when you're a little kid, right? They teach you to daven to Hashem. What are you, you know, you're daven for new toys or whatever, a bicycle, a common example, right? But, and if Hashem doesn't give you a bicycle, I remember once when we were expecting a child many years ago, I'm sorry, not many years ago, my wife didn't hear that, only a short time ago, my oldest was a son, and he had sisters. He wanted a brother. He was a little kid, he said, if Hashem doesn't give me a brother, Hashem's not fair. That's the way a little kid looks at it, right? Because what he wants is a brother. If Hashem doesn't give him what he wants, Hashem's obviously not fair. He did get a brother, by the way. Now, as you grow older, you hopefully realize that Hashem doesn't always just give you whatever you ask for. Everybody davens to have lots of parnasa, not everybody gets lots of parnasa. Everybody davens for perfect health, not everybody gets perfect health. But you have to have betachin that whatever you're getting from Hashem is the correct thing. The night watchman has betachin that the sun will come up when it's supposed to. He's not looking up to see, I hope the sun comes up early. He's looking up to see, is it time for the sun to come up? So betachin means saying Hashem is taking care of all of these things and He'll do it according to His great plan, so please help me as part of your plan, Hashem. What more powerful tefillah can there be than to simply say to Hashem, I am Gibrah. I am calling to you from the depths. I don't even know what to say. I know that you have a plan for the world. Please help me. I think the word in English is plaintive. A plaintive cry. You can't be more plaintive than that. It's not always easy to keep in mind and to really have a solid belief that every single thing that happens in the world is part of Hashem's plan. That's not so easy. Betachin is harder than emunah. That Hashem brought us out of Mitzrayim, okay, we worked on that, we believe that. That every single thing that happens, good or bad, is a part of Hashem's plan is a more difficult thing. So I was trying to think of a story to illustrate the fact that Hashem always has a plan for the world, even if it doesn't seem like it. And I wanted to have two criteria for this story. The first is that I wanted to illustrate that Hashem's plan for the world is not always obvious. And the second is I wanted it to be a story that I hadn't ever said before in the shir. That second part was a bit hard. So I came up with a number of stories, and I kept asking people and asking, oh, have you heard that story? Yeah, we heard that one already. Right? So I kept coming up with stories that illustrate this. Finally, I came up with one that my wife does not believe anybody has ever heard me say before. I guess this will be my last unheard story. This story is about the yeshiva of New Haven, Connecticut. How many people have heard of the Yeshiva of New Haven, Connecticut? Excellent. The Yeshiva of New Haven, Connecticut was started in the 1920s. It was started by Rabbi Levenberg, okay, who was a tremendous, tremendous Talmud Chacham from Europe. And he wanted to start a European-style yeshiva where the boys would sit and learn like they did in Europe. So he had some Balabatim in New Haven, Connecticut that wanted to assist him in this goal, and they started the Yeshiva of New Haven. And they had a small number of boys sitting there and learning successfully. When Torah Vadas in New York started, Mr. Mendelovitz, the head of Torah Vadas, used to occasionally take his boys on a bus on a field trip. And the field trip was they would go to the Yeshiva of New Haven, and they would stand and watch the boys learn. And he would tell them, this is what learning was in Europe. And he would take them back to the Yeshiva, the Torah Vadas. Now after a while, a few years, the Yeshiva wanted to get its own like building where the boys could sleep and eat, etc., etc. And they made an arrangement to get a building and a land that was on a farm that the first somebody was selling. And there was a whole financial deal. At the end, the last minute, the deal fell through. And the Balabatim, the lay people connected with the yeshiva in New Haven, were not able to come up and agree and arrange, put together whatever the financial wherewithal that the yeshiva needed to get a place to live. However, there were some Balabatim, formerly in New Haven, that lived in Cleveland. And they wrote to Rabbi Levenberg telling him that they would arrange a place if he would move the yeshiva to Cleveland. So, that's sort of a big undertaking. Remember, this isn't the day you don't just hop on a plane. Right, this is a big undertaking. He left his family in New Haven, and he took his Talmidim and they went to Cleveland. And they started calling it the Yeshiva of New Haven in Cleveland. That's what they called it then. I guess they didn't have fancy names in those days. The Yeshiva of New Haven in Cleveland. Shortly after taking the boys to Cleveland, Rabbi Levenberg fell very ill. And he had to return to New Haven, where he spent several years recuperating in a very, very serious illness. While he was back in New Haven, the yeshiva of New Haven in Cleveland was still in Cleveland. So they had a series of temporary Rosh Yeshivas while he was recuperating from this severe illness. When he finally recuperated, he came back to Cleveland, took back over the position of Rosh Yeshiva again. In 1933, he was nifter, and the yeshiva closed. So the yeshiva of New Haven in Cleveland was no more New Haven, Cleveland, gone from history. Interesting story, huh? Sounds like an interesting incident in American Jewish history. It'll probably be in the Book of American Jewish History someday. And maybe even as one of the, you know, sort of false starts on the way to the fact that after World War II, so many yeshivas opened, and look, here in the early days of America, some people tried to do this, and it was interesting. And of course, Rabbi Levenberg, and even more so his wife, deserve a tremendous, I mean, she stayed in New Haven, tremendous, and nursed him back to health and sent him back to Cleveland, tremendous reward for what they did. But it doesn't seem like a part of a great big grand scheme, really. Seems like a nice story to be in a history book. Everything's part of a Shem scheme. Let's take another look at the Yeshiva of New Haven. A number of those boys from Torah Vadas who took a field trip and stood there and watched the boys learning, today are Rebbeim, who credit their inspiration and the fact that they remained firm in America with the fact that they spent the day watching the boys learn in New Haven, Connecticut. When Reb Aaron Cutler came to America and he started the Lakewood Yeshiva, he had an idea that he would transplant a European-style yeshiva to America. People didn't think that would be so successful. But he said, you know why I'll be able to do it? Rabbi Levenberg started it first. No one even knew what Rabbi Levenberg was. And remember those temporary Rosh Yeshivas? The first one was a Talmud Chacham who came to America and couldn't get a job until the yeshiva of New Haven in Cleveland hired him. After settling in and starting the job as Rosh Yeshiva, he felt Cleveland was not for him, so he left and he moved to New York City, where he started a yeshiva called MTJ, and his name was Reb Moshe Feinstein. His replacement as the next temporary Rosh Yeshiva was also a Talmud Chacham. And he was the Rosh Yeshiva when Rabbi Levenberg recuperated. So now Rabbi Levenberg's recuperated. But in the meantime, there's a whole new Rosh Yeshiva. The boys have a whole new, the boys have never even heard of Rabbi Levenberg. What's going to be now? Is he going to come back? So this temporary Rosh Yeshiva announced publicly that he was only a caretaker for Rabbi Levenberg, and Rabbi Levenberg was a Talmud Chacham, and before Rabbi Levenberg even left New Haven and turned to Cleveland, he packed his bags and he left town. And Rabbi Levenberg came back and resumed his position. That man's name was Rabbi Ruderman, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. He drove from Cleveland to Baltimore, and he started the yeshivas Ner Yisrael.
unbelievable story.
After the war, when Elia Meir Bloch, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, Ramat Katz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha held a meeting to determine where they would relocate the new American version of the Telge Yeshiva from Europe, they selected Cleveland. People laughed at them. In fact, people in New York referred to Cleveland as Kelev Land, the land of the dogs.
Oh, no.
It's not going to be any Yiddish kind of Kelev Land.
Terrible.
But Elia Meir and Rebbetzin went to Kelev Land, because they had a Bala Boss there who was willing to give them a house to have the yeshiva in. In those days, you had a yeshiva in the house. That's where you slept, learned, ate. I mean, everything was in the house. There was 10 boys there. And that guy who gave the house, along with some of his friends, told the Rosh Yeshivas, we'll do whatever it takes to make the yeshiva there a success. You see, those Bala Batim had learned in and been a in their lives. Now they had a chance to pay back their beloved Rebbe, Rabbi Levenberg, by practicing in life the lessons that he had taught them about the importance of learning Torah, and they helped establish the Telge Yeshiva in Cleveland in the 1940s. Now to us, this is an inspiring story. But it's only one tiny, tiny example of Hashem's hand in guiding events. So events like this happen untold times a day that we have no idea of. This is just really that story, even though I might not have told it very well. I'm sure if you had someone who could tell it well, it would be a very inspiring story. All that is just a small example of what David HaMelech is saying. Trust in Hashem. Hashem takes care of everything. That's what makes this kapitel universal. It's Rabbi Levenberg's kapitel. Now, since this is before Rosh Hashanah, I felt I should add another story. And so I recently heard a story that illustrates that bitachon in Hashem is available to anybody. We think, tremendous tzaddikim who've achieved great heights of bitachon and trusting in Hashem. Every Jew has the capability to be a tremendous baal bitachon. This story comes from a rabbi in the IDF in Israel. And at the time, he and a group of rabbis from the IDF were supposed to go up to the Temple Mount. So behind the Kosel, by the Dome of the Rock, there is the Temple Mount. Now, there's different halachas. In fact, you can't go up there. I don't know all the details, and I don't know how it was arranged. I don't know any of those details. Right? But it's not germane to the story anyway. But this rabbi and his fellow IDF rabbis, we had to go up there, and they were escorted by an Israeli policeman. And the Israeli policeman was bareheaded and wore a kippah. He's carrying a weapon. It looked like someone pretty far from what we would consider to be, a Shomer Shabbos individual. Even when he took the rabbis up to the Temple Mount, and everyone, was in awe, he didn't even put on a kippah.
Oh my gosh.
Now he had some instructions for the rabbis. He told them, the Palestinians are in charge here. And they have a strict rule, no Jews are allowed to pray in this area. So the rabbi said, okay, we'll be a no praying zone for us. So it was summer, and it's boiling hot. And there he said, the rabbis, he said the person speaking was going on and on and on and on. It's very hot. And he sort of like bent his head down a little bit to try and get a little more in the shade to cool off. And a Palestinian police officer started beating him on the back with a baton. With their police baton. So the Israeli police officer came over and broke it up. And the rabbi had no idea what was going on. So they took him aside and explained to him that the Palestinian police officer thought when he bent his head he might be praying. So they started beating him on the back with a baton. And then the Israeli policeman, bareheaded on the Temple Mount, came closer to the rabbi and said in a soft voice, I'll say it first in Hebrew, Savlanut Chabibi, Od Yavo Yom Shekulanu Ne'amad B'makom Hazev and Yitpalel B'yachad Amishav. Patience, my friend. There will come a day when we will all stand in this place and pray together with all of Amishav. The bareheaded Israeli policeman is telling the rabbi that. How can he say such a thing? Right? Because way deep down inside, right, there's a pintle yid, and what we mean by a pintle yid is that he knows deep down inside that Hashem's running the world. You don't have to be a big tzaddik. Savlanut chabibi. Be patient. Od yavo yom shekulanu ne'amod b'nakom hazeh. There will come a day we will all stand here beneath palel b'yachad, and we will daven together im Am Yisrael, with Am Yisrael. That's what the bareheaded policeman said. Having a pintle of yid means that deep down inside, every Jew knows Hashem runs the world.
You don't have to be a big tzaddik to be a Baal Batachon. You just have to concentrate on the fact that Hashem is taking care of everything. Savlanut chanim. Every Jew has the ability to find a way to express his Batachon in Hashem. And when you don't know what to say, and when you don't know how to express your Batachon in Hashem, and you don't know exactly how to explain to Hashem how desperate you feel, says David HaMelech, I wrote a kapitel for you. You can just open to Kuf Lamed, and you can say these words, and I encapsulated all of the message for you. I encapsulated the message of Rabbi Levenberg, and the message of the bareheaded police officer, and the message of every Pintala Yid who knows that Hashem really wants the world. Just call me Makim Krasi. If I'm calling you for the depths, I don't know what to say. You run the world. Please help me, Hashem. Shalom v'kasim v'chasim v'tayimah. And be'ezus Hashem, the words of that Israeli policeman should be Makayim this week. Questions?